I remember when I was in the high school band, way back, we had band competitions. We had music that we had previously were going to play, but then we were giving impromptu music, and we were given 15 minutes to review it and then play it. Now, I had to scramble real quick to put something together this week, so I thought I'd just continue my series on what if Jesus had never been born? Would there never have been a difference based on James Kennedy's book by the same title? We've already seen in previous messages that Christianity has increased the value of human life. It promoted for the care of the poor and the sick, and is contributed to the development of good government, civil and religious rights, and to the development of science and education, and has brought many great improvements and contributions to all people, not just to Christians. Now, today we're going to look at Christianity's contribution to economics and the work ethic. My main premise here is where Christianity has advanced economics, prosperity has followed. So wherever the gospel has gone and Christianity has been developed, we also find that correspondingly, economic prosperity has also been in those countries, as we see in the United States, Canada, most of the Europe, Australia, all the places where Christianity recently has been predominant. We also find that these also are the nations that are also economically prosperous. Some may dispute the connection, but think about these other kinds of religions. Did economic prosperity come about in Islam? No, they're fatalistic. Hinduism looks at material things as being evil. They don't want to accumulate things. Same thing, Buddhism is similar. Communism, atheism. We don't see economic prosperity occurring in the Soviet Union and China. And it's interesting that why did South America, even though it was colonized about the same time as North America, but it never really became economically as prosperous as North America? It's because of the philosophies of the Roman Catholic Church still being carried over from the Middle Ages. All right, but we've seen that Christianity has also promoted free markets, free market economies. And where Christianity has spread and where free market economies have spread, we're beginning to see those countries also sharing in economic prosperity. Now, the biblical foundation for economics is found in the Bible. There are 700 plus references to money in the scriptures. In fact, 2/3 of the parables deal with money. Remember O.S. Hawkins, First Baptist Church, Fort Lauderdale, always used to say, you know, Jesus talked about money more than he talked about heaven and hell in percentage, okay? Which is true. We find that the biblical foundation for good economics is found in the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not covet. All right? Don't even think about stealing something. All right? It is a sound endorsement of private property. And the rights of owners to, and the definition of the private property, with the rights of owners to decide the use of their goods and the resources as they see fit. Also, private property is the foundation of capitalism and economic prosperity. It's also the foundation of America. Because what did Thomas Jefferson say in the Declaration of Independence? All men are created equal, and that all men have been endowed by their Creator with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I don't know if many of you know that the original draft he wrote in there was the pursuit of property. And he crossed it out, and pursuit of happiness just sounds better. You know, he was more eloquent with that. But it's, if you don't have private property, you don't have much of anything. You have to begin there. Well, what is capital, or what is capitalism? I want to show you a short little video here by the John Birch Society that's going to talk about this. If I can get the play here. Let's see here.
Americans were led to believe that there was a great struggle going on between capitalism and the communist world.
Now that the struggle existed, adversaries were rarely active. No discussion about economic systems will make sense without first defining terms. And one of the most basic terms in economics is, whose definition is, the means of production. To illustrate what capital is, let's consider a very simple economy. On the sands of a small island, a castaway has just washed ashore. He has no food and he's hungry. He searches the island, he finds no berries, coconuts, or anything edible. He goes back into the water and tries to catch fish with his bare hands, but he fails. So he goes back up on shore, he finds a bush. He breaks off a branch, he gnaws at one end to make a sharp tip. Back into the water he goes, and with his spear, he catches fish. His spear is capital. It's the means of production for catching fish. He gave up some of his time and some of his energy to produce something he could not eat, but something that would help him to produce something that he could eat. Capital, therefore, can be tools, machinery, and even a man's handmade spear to catch fish. Such being the case, consider that the communists in the former Soviet Union, as well as in China and Cuba, have always used tools and machinery. Officials there even view people as capital. Therefore, by strict definition, are not communists capitalists? For that matter, isn't everyone a capitalist? And so, is not every economic system a capitalist system? What then is the difference between what the communist system is and what the American capitalist system is supposed to be? The difference is ownership of the capital. Is the system monopolistic, state-controlled capitalism, or is it competitive, free enterprise capitalism? It is between these two opposing economic systems that a battle has always raged. Before we proceed, let's also define free market. Basically, it's a self-regulating system in which all parties are completely free to transact with one another. But where force, fraud, or injury damages one party, the government's role is only to punish those who commit such offenses and to vindicate the rights of the other party. This protects the integrity of the free market or free enterprise system without intervening in it. The term private property also needs clarification, for private ownership and control of property is a key component in the free enterprise system. In order for ownership of property to be full and complete, all four of its aspects must be met. These are title, control, use, and the ability to dispose of what a person owns. In a free market economy, these aspects are unrestrained, so long as the owner does not infringe on the legitimate rights and claims of others. True ownership of property and freedom go hand in hand. They always have. Now let's compare the two systems of capitalism. In the competitive free enterprise system, capital or property is both owned privately and controlled privately. In the monopolistic system, holding title to capital can be accomplished privately or by the state. But more importantly, capital is controlled by the state or by the elite few who control the state. The Communist Manifesto, which contains the basic program for all communists and all socialists, explicitly preaches the destruction and abolition of private property. Karl Marx understood the powers of controlling capital, and so have all communists and socialists who have ever looked and still look to Marx as their leader. State-controlled capitalism results in high prices and low quality. After all, why would a monopoly strive to improve if it has no competition? On the other hand, honest, thrifty, and hardworking producers throughout the world prefer a competitive free enterprise system for all. Here, low prices and high quality prevail because a variety of producers will seek to attract the widest amount of customers. Competition results in excellence and always has.
As we see that Christianity has brought economic prosperity, and that's based on the fact that the economic prosperity is based on private property. Now, again, I want to define some of this. Free market capitalism is a system of freely exchanged private property and goods and services with, a combination with, the central government protecting and enforcing these rights. A system of voluntary relationships in which people exchange peacefully within a framework of laws which protect people from the rights of force, fraud, theft, and the violation of contracts. In a market-controlled capitalism, such as socialism, this is an economic system that replaces the free market as a means of providing for consumption, production, and distribution with central planning. It replaces the peaceful volunteer exchange of with coerced and violent means of exchange. And that's a quote from this book called Poverty and Wealth, The Christian Debate Over Capitalism. Now, some would say, what kind of economic systems are there? I like to say, as he says, there's two options, two economic options that we have to choose from. There's capitalism, as we call free market, which upholds the biblical concept of private property, and then there's socialism, which is market-controlled, which eliminates private property. The extreme forms of communism and fascism has complete control and ownership of all property. But there are variations here, as we see throughout history, and what's called interventionism. Okay? Now, big word, but what it means, basically, is the more intervention we have, over here on the left, more intervention, the more control, the more socialism we have. The less intervention we have, over here on the right, we have more capitalism, free market opportunity. We're seeing that today, right? The exchange of presidents. Before we had somebody, let's go back all the way to beginning with FDR, right? More interventionism, right? Then we swung over here, we had the Republicans with Eisenhower, less interventionism. Kennedy was also a Democrat, was less interventionist than others. Then we swung back with Johnson, Reagan, Jimmy Carter. We go back and forth to more intervention, less intervention. So we see this swing going back. Which one should we choose? Well, we see that the capitalism has a free market views, has a biblical view of human nature, and that it sees that human nature is sinful, where socialism has an utopia view of human nature, and they see basically that man is basically good. The capitalist free market understands the defects in the market are the result of sin, not of the market itself. Okay? It presupposes a system of morality. It sets limits and laws in ways people should exchange. It understands that people can exploit you and lie to you. All right? So they're going to manipulate the market. And the role of government is to step in and to correct those errors. It's not a pure system. That's why we need the government to step in and to prevent fraud. Socialism, though, sees the defects in the market as a result of the system. What we need to do is just get better people to work to control the system or operate the system, run the system. You know, the Democrats and Republicans will go, well, we think we can run the system better than they can, you know. So they see that all we have to do is improve the system or change the people, and then that's how we fix the system. But it fails to take into account man's sinfulness and the danger of giving power to an elite few. You know, the old statement, power corrupts, and ultimate power corrupts ultimately. So the more power you give to an elite few, the more they abuse it, and the more an utopia view is out the window. Does the Bible, some people think, well, Bible teaches socialism, right? Is that the contribution that Christianity has provided throughout history? Well, they look at this verse in Acts 4:32. Now the multitude of those who believed were of one heart and one soul. Neither did anyone say that any of the things he possessed was his own, but they had all things in common. Now, what interesting was this, is that this was not mandatory selling of their property. All right? later on in chapter 4 says, now, there was those anyone among them who lacked, for all who were possessors, private property, of the lands and houses sold them. So they previously, they belonged to them, they owned it, and they voluntarily then sold it and brought the proceeds to the apostles' feet and they distributed it. Okay? Peter said to Annas in chapter 5 when he went and sold the property, an example of this, and he brought it and he said, oh, I had this amount, but he lied about the amount, okay? And Peter says to him, while it remained, was it not your own? It was still his own. It was his property. And after it was sold, was it not your own to control? So he had ownership and control of the property. It was up to him that he voluntarily decided to choose to sell that property and give it. Right? Voluntary free will charity is what the Bible teaches. Not mandatory, coerced giving. To the Macedonians, they said according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord. No one forced them to give to the poor saints in Jerusalem. And it was according to what a person has, his capital, that they gave, not according to what they don't have. You know, if you want to give more to the poor, you need more capital. The more capital you have, the more you can give, right? So it was according to what they gave. They didn't steal it from someone, get it, take it from somebody else, and then give it to some, then give it to the poor, like sometimes the government does. They say they want, they'll take through taxes, fees and everything, and we're going to take it from them and give it to the poor people. It's not their own. It's they're taking it from other people and giving it to others. All right? Socialism is then the economics of, some view, one particular guy, Jose Miguel Bonillo, who was a Latin Protestant theologian, whatever, he says socialism is the economic of compassion, the essential part of the Christian gospel, he says. Capitalism is unchristian, anti-Christian, because it gives a prominent place to greed and other unchristian values. So is capitalism, capital, money, evil? Well, some people, obviously this is a little slide I found, says capitalism is crisis, it's war, it's exploitation, it's corruption, it's inequalities, pollution, and so forth. There's arguments against free capitalism. These are some of them. That capitalism or free market economies, which Christianity has developed, is a form that uses it to exploit people. It uses zero sum game, which I'll explain. Selfishness, greed, and competitiveness. So these are also arguments for interventionism, or arguments for why we should have controlled markets and we should get the government more involved into people's lives and help make them. Coerce them into making their economic decisions. All right. First of all, let's respond to some of these. Oh, capitalism causes poverty. Now, many times people are poor for the very reason because they are exploited and they are abused and oppressed. Okay, that's often the case. But there are other reasons for why people may be poor. They may have an accident. They become ill. They indulge in some sin of sex, drugs, and alcohol, which would cause them to get in an accident. And many people become poor, gambling, and so forth. They become involved in lawlessness and crime, and they end up in prison. Something faster way to get poor is to go put yourself in prison because you lose your job. And you lose your freedom, and you have no income, you become poor. Then when you get out of prison, people don't want to hire you because you're a criminal, right? And a basic reason for lawlessness, some people are just downright lazy, all right? All right, so the zero-sum game is this. Only one participant can win. In other words, only the rich win. You've heard the story. Well, rich are grabbing a bigger piece of the pie, and the rich keep getting richer, right? That's how socialists look at things. However, there is what's called the positive sum game, where both participants win, both the rich and poor win, all right? Not the pie doesn't get smaller or get big piece, it just simply gets bigger. So there's no such thing as trickle-down economics, but there is trickle-around economics. The pie keeps getting bigger, and everyone begins to benefit from it. And here's a fact. From 1790 to 1980, the bottom 20% of income earners raised their real standard of living by 750%. All right? So the base, even the people on the bottom, benefited greatly by economic prosperity that was the result of free market capitalism. All right. Now others say, "Well, free market capital causes selfishness," but there is the other side. There's self-interest. In fact, the Bible tells us that we should be interested in our own self-interest. 1 Timothy 5:8 says, "If anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his own household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." Others say, "Well, greed. Capitalism breeds greed. The free market forces people to find ways of serving the needs of others with whom they wish to exchange. If you someone who's trying to sell you a product and make money and make capital, he's going to find ways to try to get you to buy that, all right? Which is legitimate unless he's lying to you or using fraud. That's a legitimate way of obtaining capital, money. Now, let's take an example here. There's two gas stations on the corner, all right? One's charging $2.30. That's what about the going rate right now is, right? There's this other gas station who's charging $5. So you would say, well, which of these gas stations owner is the greediest? You would say, well, the guy there with $5 a gallon, he's the greediest, right? Well, he might be greedy, but that's darn right stupid, right? Because if you're driving down the road, you come to this intersection, which gas station should I go to? The $2.30 gas station or the $5 gas station? I'll go to the cheaper one. As long as he's not defrauding you, okay, and lying to you, and he's got bad gas, okay, that's the gas station you want to go to. So you notice the guy on there on the right there, there's nobody at the gas pump. He's not going to make any money, right? It doesn't matter how his greed works. So the free market allows natural human desires to be satisfied in a non-violent way without coercion. Well, I'm going to say competitiveness, competition. It produces aggression, rivalry, conflict, cheating, discrimination, war, right? However, these are simply ways sin is manifested, not that there's anything wrong with competition in and of itself. Right? Competitiveness stirs people to higher levels of excellence and benefits the masses and increases productive capacity of society. So all of these arguments against free market economies and for controlled market economies are just basically are myths. They're not true. They're just basically not true. So socialist economies do not work. They cannot work. They are actually grossly inefficient, and they promote thievery and coercion. Now, Margaret Thatcher there, I got a picture of her there. She said once, I heard, that she says socialism works only until it runs out of other people's money. And then it fails. Now, I was going to have a picture here of showing that socialist economies actually hurt the very people oftentimes it attempts. I have it on my phone. I showed it to some of those in the Sunday school class a couple months ago. It was a bus bench I saw in Southwest Dade. I was stuck in a traffic jam, and I look over at this bus bench, and I see this sign on there. It says, "Can't afford Obamacare." I said, what? Can't afford Obamacare. Now, wait a minute. What is Obamacare, the official name? The Affordable Care Act. Can't afford the Affordable Care Act. What is that? That shows that the very people they were trying to help, the people that can't afford to buy health insurance, can't buy health insurance from the very program that they set up to assist them. All right? Free market capitalism. Now, I'll mention the Republicans, right? They're over there discussing how they're going to change things. I don't know. We'll see what happens. All right. Capitalism is quite simply the most moral, you could even say the loving system of economic exchange, because capitalism works. Wherever you see free market economies, which is then protected by governments preventing from fraud and from lying and cheating and so forth, we see economic prosperity happens in those countries. All right, let's talk about the labor and the work ethic. God has given us responsibility. All right, the Lord took the man back in the Garden of Eden and put him in the Garden of Eden and told him to tend and to keep it. So we have a responsibility to take care of this earth. God blessed them, that is Adam and Eve, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and rule over the animals and everything else. And he repeated that to Noah in chapter 9, verse 1. They were to be responsible. Some people think that work itself is a curse, but it's not a curse. God said, cursed is the ground for your sake, and the toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. By the sweat of your brow you will eat bread. God didn't curse work itself. He didn't make it more difficult. Though sometimes I think about this verse and I think, well, I didn't really, I went down to the grocery store. I didn't have to spend a lot of time, trying to grow something in my backyard. I have a little tomato plant back there. I'm still waiting for the little tomato to come out. All right. But it was pretty simple. I didn't toil too much to get my food, but I did have to toil. I'd get up real early, go to work, go to Miami, drive back and get a paycheck in order to get the money to go to the grocery store to pay. So work is hard. Everyone knows that, right? But it's not a curse. It's actually a blessing. Why do Christians prosper? Here's some reasons. Well, Christians tend to worry less. We're told, do not be anxious, right? Don't be worried. Don't worry about your daily things. God will provide, all right? We can ask God for help and aid from God, all right? We can receive wisdom and new ideas from God, how to make more capital and become prosperous. We're given strength and perseverance. We're given purpose. Why are we doing all of this? Why am I going to work every day? Sitting through traffic and everything? There's a purpose in it. And there's accountability, knowing that someday we'll all have to be held accountable for the work that we do. That's kind of the negative side of motivating us to do the work. So Christians, for the most part, are more prosperous if they follow the principles of the Bible. All right. I heard on the radio, read somewhere, that during the last housing crisis, when the bubble burst, that Christian people were less affected by it because they didn't lend and over borrow money from the banks, and therefore they weren't in the dire financial situation a lot of other people were, because they had over financed and borrowed too much money. So Christians prospered more. Remember this, then behold, Jesus said, I am coming quickly, and my reward, and the RSV says recompense, the pay, is with me to give everyone according to his work. So our work is going to be rewarded. Because Christians have been given these enhanced abilities, they can actually produce more, we can invest more, we can save more, and more importantly, we can also give more voluntarily. My father-in-law's brother recently passed away. We went and visited him one time in Lancaster County. This was many years ago. He pointed out that Lancaster County was the most productive county in the country. Even though you see them there, they're still out there drawing their horses, right? They're very productive. You know, the Amish are our Baptist brethren. They're the descendants of the Anabaptists that left Europe because of persecution, came here, And he went to Pennsylvania because William Penn, a Quaker Christian, allowed them to come over and settle there. And they became very prosperous. You see their big farms, even though they kind of shun materialism, they do have very large houses and farms, as you see there. All right, so they're believers, at least in the small C sense. All right. Now, is wealth evil? Of course, money is not the root of all evil, but only the love of money, as Timothy says, or Paul says in 1 Timothy. The love of money is the root of all sorts of evil. Sometimes people say, is lending money evil? What about interest? How much interest should I charge? All right. From 400 BC to 1550, lending money was with interest was considered non-productive. It was considered wrong. The church didn't want to allow people to do that because they thought they were trying to keep people from being exploited by people who had money, right? However, John Calvin changed everything, freed money, when he considered prohibiting the charging of interest as neither right nor biblical. He upheld the right of private property and the biblical concept of stewardship that we will all give in accounting. So from 1550, he began, some think he's the father of capitalism. You know, imagine today, how many people here have took out a loan on their house or car or something? Just about everybody, right? Okay. Now imagine a world where you couldn't do that. Now, me, myself, I wouldn't be able to afford a car, a house, at least the one, I'd have to save money over a long period of time. And then when I finally had the money to pay for it, I would go out and buy it. Prosperity that we have is allowed because of the lending of money. Now, he said that you shouldn't lend to the poor or charge interest to the poor. But anyway, you know, there was an experiment in socialism, the first experiment in socialism in the United States. You heard the story of the pilgrims coming to America and Plymouth. There's William Bradford. And the first year they maintained that all things would be held in common and people were working for the common good. That was 1621. Then, in 1622, actually that should be 16, the next year they abandoned this idea every year and received a parcel of land for his own good. Oh, wait a minute, that's not William Bradford. Who is that guy? That's some tough pilgrim there. So, they abandoned socialism. Then there's a young pilgrim there we found standing next to William Bradford's grave in 2010. We found that they put the practice of 2 Thessalonians 3 into practice, and if anyone does not work, neither shall they eat. So they turned the abandoning of socialism into the Thanksgiving being established. A little side note here at the very end is that this church here, the First Parish of Plymouth, isn't the actual church of the pilgrims, but it's on the site of where the pilgrims had their first church. In fact, this is probably, I think, like the third building that's been there. But today it's a Unitarian and a Universalist church. Unfortunately, they have apparently abandoned Christianity. Now, what if Jesus had never been born? I would say that the world would have been a much poorer place. So, my final premise and conclusion is that where Christianity has advanced, and free market economies had advanced, which were developed by Christian believers, economic prosperity has followed.